And now, Virgin Most Powerful Radio is pleased to present Hands-On Apologetics with renowned Catholic author and apologist, Gary Matsuda.
Hey, welcome back, everybody. Hello. Greetings. Yes, it's time for apologetics. You have entered into the apologetics zone, the Virgin Most Powerful, I guess you could say, dojo, where we wrestle with defending, explaining the faith, and kind of learn how to share the faith with confidence and also clarity. And we have a great show in store for you today. A few episodes ago, I had a caller. Actually, he's a regular. I've noticed he was a caller on other programs of Virgin Most Powerful. And we were discussing one of the logical fallacies, which is kind of appeal to flattery. And he noted that in the Middle East, that Muslims often use this appeal to flattery. They'll invite Christians into your homes and show them all sorts of kindness and hospitality and try to build bridges by saying, you know, we believe in Jesus and we love Mary just like you. And that's true to an extent, I suppose. We do have some things in common, some things not in common. And actually today our guest is going to help us sort out, at least in terms of Jesus and the Quran, you know, what truth from fiction, what we share together, where we diverge, and where do these ideas about Jesus come from inside the Quran. We're going to have Dr. Brian Bradford join us and talk about Muhammad's Jesus, Quran parallels with non-biblical texts. That's going to be fun. It's always fascinating to have a discussion with Dr. Bradford. He's done a lot of research into the roots of Islam, the doctrinal roots of Islam, and it's always an education to have him on the show. So we'll talk to him after the first break, and also we're going to do our exercises. We're going to talk about finding the fallacy, and since it's Friday, the fallacy for today is actually a propaganda technique. It's known as guilt by association, and the Meet Early Father for today is Victor Avita. Victor Avita. So we have our work cut out for us. And it's time to give our little shout out here to those watching live stream on social media, Facebook, YouTube. Hello, everybody. Greetings. Good to see you. Yes, the emojis explosion has begun. yes. Let's see. I'm just looking over lots of friendly new names, too. Awesome. Well, welcome aboard. And also welcome to you listening on radio throughout the United States and abroad. Welcome to the dojo. And, you know, let's study the faith together. Let's share our experiences. And hopefully we'll be able to explain, defend the faith with charity and clarity. And as always, you are part of the conversation. If you'd like to call up, maybe you'll have a question for Dr. Bradford. Give us a call at 888-526-2151. That's 888-526-2151. Love to talk to you. Or if you have a question, please email us. We've been getting lots of great emails, and I love it. Just keep it coming, because I think probably next week I'll have a little bit of time. We'll be able to go through some of these emails. There's some fantastic stuff in the dojo mailbox. And maybe you would like to make your contribution. So send us an email. The questions at handsonapologetics.com. Share your questions, experiences. Tell us what's going on. And maybe if there's anything you need advice on and how to explain the faith or share the faith with someone, let us know. I mean, it'd be great to throw out some ideas and have it, you know, not only the people on live stream talk about it, suggest ideas, but also maybe some people can call in. And we can share our experience, right? Share our experience. And also, I should mention that if for chance that you can't listen to the whole program, or maybe we've had guests that in the past that you would love to hear, all those wonderful programs are available on virginmostpowerfulradio.org website. virginmostpowerfulradio.org. Just go to shows, click down, select a show like Hands-On Apologetics, and you can have at your fingertips all the shows that we've had, all the wonderful interviews, and it's a valuable resource, not only for this show, but for all the great programming on Virgin Most Powerful. Highly recommend it. So let's see. I did the shout-outs. I did the Bojo Mailbox. Why don't we jump into our exercises, shall we? And like I said, you know, every Friday, I like to switch things up a little bit. Maybe not talk about informal fallacy, but talk about a propaganda technique. Propaganda techniques are sometimes used in apologetics, but it's definitely used in the area of politics and advertisement. It is certainly in social media, things like that. And they can be kind of pernicious because propaganda is essentially a way of sneaking in under our critical radar to entice us to believe or do something. So if it's advertising, chances are the advertising's enticing us to buy a product or, you know, politics to vote for a person or join an agenda or something like that. But the problem with propaganda is, like I said, it's subrational. It doesn't provide any evidence. It doesn't provide any basis for why people ought to do or think X. But rather, it's just a kind of manipulation. And the manipulation for today is guilt by association. Now, guilt by association is like the negative side of what's called transference of value. This is one of those strange things us humans do. It's we tend to, whenever we see, especially see, not necessarily hear or read, although it does occur there too. Whenever we see an individual juxtaposed with another individual or symbol, or a thing that's either positive or negative, we kind of transfer those positive, negative things to the person who's associated with it. For example, if you have a politician and they're standing next to the American flag, if you're an American, then, you know, that gives feelings of patriotism, you know, feelings of unity, things like that. Well, just by having them stand by a flag or having her stand by a flag, that could be a transference of value. So you start thinking of the candidate as being patriotic. Now, that could be positive or negative. Now, guilt by association is essentially the negative kind. You know, it's like showing a picture of somebody and then Hitler. Or, you know, anybody that has a kind of odious, bad reputation, right? Being associated with them, especially in photos, being near them, talking to them, or symbols that are odious, like a swastika or something like that, in the background or around somebody, we have a tendency, like I said, when we see these two things together, to transfer value, either positive or negative, to the other person. And trust me, this is something that political campaigns, advertising, you know, people involved with influencing people, they're well aware of this. And in fact, it's not unusual to see this kind of guilt by association used as a technique to poison people's views of other people, things like that. And, you know, and that's true in movies, by the way, also. If you're ever, when you're watching a movie, pay attention to what's going on in the background. What are the things that are in their living room or things that are in the background? And you will notice that often, for example, they might have something, some sort of, something that's odious or evil or something pernicious or something, you know, in the scene with the villain. And all that does is it wants to kind of increase the effect that the villain is bad and such. They're using guilt by association in those cases. How do we defeat this propaganda? Well, the thing is with propaganda, as soon as you recognize it's being used, its power disappears. In fact, sometimes when you recognize it's being used, it backfires because no one likes to be manipulated, right? And so the clue to, or the key to unlocking propaganda and protecting yourself and loved ones is to recognize when it happens. And when you do that, like I said, the power wears off and it becomes ineffective or even backfires. So that's our finding the fallacy for today, the propaganda technique of guilt by association. And let's jump to our early church father today, shall we? This is Victor Avita. Again, I love meeting the early church fathers because there's a lot of fathers that we're familiar with, but there's many, many we aren't familiar with. And this is one of them. I don't think it's a household name at all, Victor Avita. He flourished sometime around 84, 85. Very little is known about Victor. He was the Bishop of Vita, which was in a province of Africa, North Africa. And he's the author of a book that has come down to it called The History of the Persecution in the Province of Africa. And it recounts the terrible sufferings of Catholics in Africa during the time of the Vandal kings Gaiseric and Hunneric. Okay. That was in the late 4th century. Now, this persecution was just as bloody as any other Imperial Roman persecution, except that it wasn't a general persecution of Christianity as such, but rather it was directed against Catholics and not directed towards Arianism. In other words, this particular persecution was a kind of pro-Arian type persecution. Now, the Arians, of course, were those who believed that Jesus wasn't fully God, but rather he was kind of a lesser God. And so that was where these Vandals, the barbarians, if you will, who are at least nominally Christian, but they were largely Arians, persecuted and attacked Orthodox Catholic Christians. So that's our early church father for today, Victor Avita. And sounds like there's some great quotes. I probably won't have time to read them. But anyway, stay tuned, everybody. We're going to talk to Dr. Bradford about Muhammad's Jesus. Stay tuned.
This is Terry Barber inviting you, all the men, to a men's conference June 15th at the Sacred Heart Chapel. This is going to be a day where we're going to talk about true masculinity. You know, there's a problem in the Catholic Church today. We have very few men who love the Catholic faith. And I know a lot of the wives that I'm listening to right now are saying, I want my husband to be on fire for the faith. Send him to the men's conference. Your son, send him to the men's conference by going to virginmostpowerfulradio.org or call 877-526-2151. That's June 15th. When your husband comes back from this conference or your son, they're going to have a different view about their Catholic faith because they're going to meet three men who love Jesus and his bride, the church, and are going to instill in them a love for Christ and his church, the Eucharist, Our Lady. Bring them to virginmostpowerfulradio.org. Sign up there or call 877-526-2151. Full sheen ahead.
It is only because of your continued prayers and generous donations that Virgin Most Powerful Radio can broadcast live each weekday. We count on your spiritual and financial support because you understand the urgent need for Catholic programming that shares the gospel with clarity and charity, but without compromise. Please prayerfully consider becoming a monthly donor. You can set it up with the touch of a button on our website, CatholicRC.org.
Buying or selling your home or your business property? This is Terry Barber. Real Estate for Life underwrites the Terry and Jesse Show, and they can connect you to one of 900 pro-life real estate agents around the world. And when they receive their referral fee, they will give 80% of it to a pro-life organization. Wow! That's 80%! RealEstateForLife.org, 877-LIFE-US1.
Now, back to Hands-On Apologetics with Gary Machuda. If you'd like to join the conversation, call 888-526-2151. Here's Gary.
And welcome back, everybody. And I know many Catholics aren't familiar with Islam, and very few have actually read the Quran. And it may surprise some that Jesus appears in the Quran, and our next guest is here to talk about, who is this Jesus as portrayed in the Quran? Where are there points of contact, points at which we agree, where we disagree? Well, Dr. Brian Bradford's going to help walk us through those difficulties. Dr. Bradford received his PhD from Western Michigan University in Early Islamic Studies. He's the author of several books, including Arabian Religion Before Muhammad and Surah 1 through 35 in chronological order. He's also the author of another book, Muhammad's Jesus, Quran Parallels with Non-Biblical Text. And Dr. Bradford, welcome to Hands-On Apologetics.
Hi, Gary. Great to be back.
Yeah, I was looking forward to this because, like I said, I most Catholics, I would imagine, especially Western Catholics, probably never even opened a Quran, let alone know what's in a Quran. And I imagine many are surprised to find out that the Quran actually does speak about Jesus.
That's true. I want to thank you first for having me back. And the first time I was on, I got such a load of positive emails from people saying how great it was.
Oh, great.
And more than half of those emails were simply saying, well, just as you mentioned, well, what does the Quran actually say about Jesus? What does it call him? How is he presented? And what is the context? And I thought that was a really great segue into what we could talk about today.
Yeah, absolutely. So is Jesus in the Quran?
He's mentioned in the Quran about 31 times, give or take. His name is pronounced Isa in Arabic. And for example, he's given a host of honorary titles. For example, 16 times he's called Son of Mary, which emphasizes his humanity, of course, and not his divine status. For example, Quran 57:27 says, we sent Jesus, the Son of Mary, and bestowed him with the gospel. And when we hear that, we say, okay, we can agree with that. That's not a problem. But when he is called Messiah 9 times in the Quran, we would say, well, what does that really mean? Now, it's not related to our biblical understanding of the term Messiah. He's called so in Islam in the Quran because he anointed people and he healed them. Now, there's not a direct relation that he was the Christ. It's more of an honorary title, I think, that he's given in the Quran.
Okay, so when it says that he's the Messiah, it's not tapping into like the Old Testament prophetic stream of the coming Messiah. This is something more
nothing generic. About the redemption of humanity and that sort of thing. Yeah, correct.
Right. Okay. Yeah. Very good. So, is there any other titles that he's given?
Well, for example, when it mentions Messiah in Quran 5:17, it says, surely they disbelieve who say Allah is the Messiah, the Son of Mary. Christians say the Messiah is the Son of Allah, and this is false. Now, he's also called a sign of Allah, meaning that everything Jesus did, were the miracles, preaching, that sort of thing, this was simply a sign of Allah's permission and power. Jesus was simply acting as a sign of Allah. And it also can apply to Jesus being a sign of the last days, because believe it or not, in Islam, he does have a very important role in the eschatological end times prophecies in Islam, which is very interesting as well.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. So before we get to that, so they would deny that Jesus is the Son of God, and they would,
correct.
But they would affirm that Jesus did work miracles by Allah's permission, so in a sense, he's kind of the instrument of Allah.
Right. He's also something else that other titles apply to him. He's called the Word of Allah, and we would say, well, when we hear the Word, we think of the divine Christian logos that we hear in the Gospels, but it's not really the same thing. It says that he's called Word of Allah, meaning that like Adam, Jesus was simply created by Allah's creative word saying exist, and they just came into existence. And there's really no connection, as I mentioned, to the divine logos. And Jesus is seen more as a result of Allah's creative word and not part of creation, the pre-existent son and creative word that we have in our Catholic faith.
Right. Yeah. Now, is that pertaining to the virgin birth? Because I believe they believe in the virgin birth as well. Is that correct?
They do. They do profess and believe in the Annunciation, which is interesting because it's found in the Quran, chapter 3, verse 45, I believe. And what's interesting, when you look at all the origins and the traditions behind these verses, the Annunciation, for example, if you open your Quran and go to chapter 3, you'll find it. But chronologically, it's ranked number 89 out of 114 total verses. So it actually comes quite late in the composition of the Quran. And it says, the angels come to Mary and say, Allah gives you great tidings of a word from him. His name will be Christ Jesus, son of Mary. He'll be held in honor in this world and the hereafter. He'll be closest to Allah. And then it follows our biblical story where Mary says, well, how can this be when no man has touched me? And then the angel says, well, Allah creates what he wants. He only says exist, then it becomes into existence. So it kind of copies the same story that we have in the New Testament about that as well.
Interesting. Yeah, and so they believe in the virgin birth. And you said also there's a role for Jesus in this kind of eschatological coming. Can you explain a little bit about that? Because I mean, does it square with like our understanding of the second coming, or you know, how is it
different? Well, not really. It's since Islam teaches that Jesus's life and his mission as a prophet of Islam was interrupted by the attempted crucifixion, he has to return to earth and live out the rest of his normal life, I guess you would say. It's believed that he's going to descend from heaven either at the city of Mecca or at the great mosque that is in Damascus, Syria. He's supposed to encourage the world to follow Islam. Jesus is supposed to marry, have children, and die after 40 years on earth. It's believed he'll be buried next to Muhammad. And this is why he has to return to complete his mission. And he's considered a sign of the last hour in the Quran in chapter 4. Okay. And a lot of this is really written about in something called the Book of Tribulations about the year, that's written about the year 900, give or take. And it talks about the end times battle at the city of Dabiq in Syria, which is actually the name of the magazine published by ISIS, coincidentally. And it's very interesting that he comes back to work alongside the Islamic Redeemer, an individual called the Mahdi, who's supposed to return and be considered like the guided one that's supposed to return and usher in the age of Islamic rule across the face of the earth. So it's very somewhat similar to ours, but also very different as well.
Yeah, absolutely. And so the reason why he comes back is because he still has part of his life to be lived because they deny the crucifixion. Is that correct?
Correct.
And so how do they view the crucifixion? Is that in the Quran?
It's in the Quran several times. It's in chapter 4, I believe Surah 4 is number 92 chronologically out of 114, so that comes very late as well.
Okay.
And that says, those saying, indeed, we have killed the Messiah, Jesus, the son of Mary, the messenger of God. They did not kill him, nor did they even crucify him, but another was made to resemble Jesus, and they did not kill him for certain, but no, God raised Jesus up to himself. So it was interrupted. He was taken up to heaven, and that's why he's going to return to complete his mission.
Ah, okay. Yeah,
that's, which of course is very different from the biblical understanding.
Yeah, right. Yeah, very different. In fact, I believe last program we were talking about some of the heretical Christian roots of that understanding and other things too. But it's strictly speaking, it wouldn't be the end of time, though. That would just be ushering in, like, the final tribulation before the end of time?
Yes, because it's difficult, because when you look at Islamic history, they believe the real, true, authentic, historical Jesus doesn't really come into literature until probably about the 9th century out of Iraq, because that's when the earliest collections about Jesus' life outside of the Quran get put together. Then they start having conversations and more literature written about what's going to happen. And there's various different signs. There's 10 major signs that include the coming of Jesus. They consider smoke coming out of heaven, the arrival of the false Messiah, the beast, the sun will rise from the west, Jesus and Mary will descend from heaven, the appearance of Gog and Magog. There'll be great three tremors, one in the east, one in the west, one in Arabia. Fire will burst forth from the Arabian Peninsula and drive people to their final assembly. And it's very late in Islam when all this starts. Like I said, it's about the year 900 when all this literature finally starts coming out. So it's 200, 300 years after Muhammad died. So it even takes place and gets really fabricated even after Muhammad's life.
Right. Yeah. But so this would be extra Quranic material then, right?
Correct. Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. So, so that's interesting because, you can kind of see some Christian influence even there. I mean, it's very different from what we would understand, you know, the end times would be, yet there are a little bit of similarities too.
Right. Right. Now, when you look at the idea about the Islamic Redeemer, the Mahdi, the hidden one, the guided one.
Yeah.
He's supposed to arrive on a white horse, which resembles to me the first horseman that we have in the Book of Revelation.
Right.
And there's black and white flags, which we can say is ISIS. There's the attempted conquering of Israel. The discovery of the Ark of the Covenant and the true Gospels will be discovered by this Mahdi, who will present them to the world with Jesus in an effort, I guess, in essence, to say, look, you know, these true Gospels that we found match the Quran, so we're right and you're wrong, and have a nice day. That's kind of the interpretation they give.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, that's, yeah, very good. Let's see. I hate to start another topic because we're right about on top of the break, but when we come back on the other side of the break, why don't we talk a little bit about where did some of these ideas about Jesus come from earlier literature, you know, some pre-Islamic sources, if you would. Does it sound good?
Sure.
All right. Very good. Well, we're talking with Dr. Brian Bradford about Jesus. But Jesus as portrayed in the Quran. So we're talking about Muhammad's Jesus. Stay tuned, everybody. And we're going to delve even deeper into who this Jesus is. So stay tuned.
This is Terry Barber inviting you, all the men, to a men's conference June 15th at the Sacred Heart Chapel. This is going to be a day where we're going to talk about true masculinity. You know, there's a problem in the Catholic Church today. We have very few men who love the Catholic faith. And I know a lot of the wives that I'm listening to right now are saying, I want my husband to be on fire for the faith. Send him to the men's conference. Your son, send him to the men's conference by going to virginmostpowerfulradio.org or call 877-526-2151. That's June 15th. When your husband comes back from this conference or your son, they're going to have a different view about their Catholic faith because they're going to meet three men who love Jesus and his bride, the church, and are going to instill in them a love for Christ and his church, the Eucharist, Our Lady. Bring them to virginmostpowerfulradio.org. Sign up there or call 877-526-2151. Full sheen ahead.
It is only because of your continued prayers and generous donations that Virgin Most Powerful Radio can broadcast live each weekday. We count on your spiritual and financial support because you understand the urgent need for Catholic programming that shares the gospel with clarity and charity, but without compromise. Please prayerfully consider becoming a monthly donor. You can set it up with the touch of a button on our website, CatholicRC.org.
Buying or selling your home or your business property? This is Terry Barber. Real Estate for Life underwrites the Terry and Jesse Show, and they can connect you to one of 900 pro-life real estate agents around the world. And when they receive their referral fee, they will give 80% of it to a pro-life organization. Wow! That's 80%! RealEstateForLife.org, 877-LIFE-US1.
This is Jesse Romero. You're listening to Hands-On Apologetics with Gary Machuda on Virgin Most Powerful Radio.
And welcome back, everybody. We're talking about Jesus and the Quran, and specifically with Dr. Brian Bradford, a wonderful resource on this material. And actually, you know, before Dr. Bradford, before we get to some of the source material for this information on Jesus, you mentioned before the break that there was this idea that Jesus and Mary would return. Can you maybe sketch out just very quickly a little bit about how Mary's portrayed in the Quran?
Well, she's the only woman named in the Quran. She has a very high status in Islam, and I think that derives from a group who lived in Arabia that we know from Christian sources from about the 400s. There was a group called the Colyridians, which is a derivative of a fancy Greek word, which means a fancy little cake that people would bake and in celebration of Mary. And they sang hymns to her in Arabic and revered her as a type of deity. And we know that was in pre-Islamic Arabia. So I think that has always influenced Muhammad's perception of Mary and who she was.
Yeah.
And we even know that in pre-Islamic times, there were portraits and icons of Jesus and Mary that were hanging on the Kaaba, the great structure that is inside Mecca today. So that's always been very interesting to me.
Really? I didn't know that. So she's mentioned in the Quran. She's given a very high opinion, and she's going to return as well. Did I hear that correctly?
Yeah, that's one of the signs of the 10 signs of the end times, is that Jesus appearing in the sky and descending with Mary, which I've always thought is very interesting and very almost Catholic, I would say, in the way that that is presented.
You know, now this is really off topic, but I got to share this with you. My friend is a Maronite Rite Catholic, went to Lebanon and was visiting one of the Marian shrines there, and he was climbing up to the top of the shrine. And he thought that there were a bunch of Catholic nuns at the top, but when he went there, he was shocked to find that there were Shiite Muslim women there to honor Mary. And
wow.
So it's interesting. You know, that explains a lot as far as Marian apparitions and how, you know, there may be some tie to evangelizing Islam.
That's true. I've always thought that. But that was one of the few common points I found in discussing with Muslims when I was in Jerusalem, was the person of Mary and how important she was and her church that's there, that's in Jerusalem. And it was really interesting. But, I mean, there comes a certain point where they kind of go off the historical rails a little bit and talk about all these other stories that we're not familiar with that come, you know, almost 1,000 years later in their literature. But there is still some ground there, I think, and that's a good point to make.
Yeah, very good. Well, let's go back to Jesus in the Quran, and you mentioned that, well, the Annunciation, that there is apparently a section that seems to have contact with the New Testament text. Are there any other points of contact with Jesus and the New Testament in the Quran?
Well, it says he raised the dead and he healed the sick, but there's not any more details than that.
Okay.
The few miracles that Jesus does perform, he speaks in the cradle when he's an infant, and he also makes clay birds come to life when he claps his hands and they fly around at his command. So those are really the only two that are used specifically in detail. And when you look at the historical sources, those derive from pre-Islamic non-biblical stories dating as early as second and third century, so they've been around for quite a while before they found their way into the Quran.
Oh, interesting. Yeah, tell us a little bit about that.
Well, for example, there's, well, we talk about the birth of Jesus, which is in the Quran, chapter 19, which is actually number 44 chronologically. It says that Mary drew herself to the trunk of a palm tree to rest. The child called out from beneath her, and he says, "Do not grieve. Your Lord has made a stream to flow beneath you. And shake the tree, and you will have fruit supply, and you'll get fresh dates to refresh you." And this story, Gary, is almost taken word for word from the gospel, something called the Gospel of Pseudo-Matthew, which derived from a Hebrew Matthew, which is written about in the histories and the Christian writers found down in modern-day Yemen as early as about the year 220. It was used by Christian Jews who had settled in modern-day Yemen. And it's also the source that we have for Jesus speaking in the cradle as an infant. So there's a lot of ways you can pick apart the Quran and look at these stories about Jesus and say, okay, they came from these sources, which predate Islam, in some cases, you know, five, six centuries. So that's pretty amazing.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. What about the clay birds? Do you know what the source is for that?
The clay birds, that's mentioned in the Quran a few times, chapter 3, chapter 5, I believe. And it says Jesus only does that with Allah's permission. And that's also taken from Pseudo-Matthew, parts of the a Greek version of the infancy gospel of Thomas, and the Arabic infancy gospel, which dated about the year 500 or 600, give or take. And what's interesting about those two particular miracles, Jesus making clay birds and talking in the cradle, were so important to Islam that they remained in circulation, and they're the only two specific stories that are in the biography of Muhammad that he uses in a debate with Christians from a nearby city to prove that Jesus was not God by referring to these stories, which is very interesting.
Yeah. Yeah. So, that is interesting. So what would be the apologetic power behind that? Do you have any insight into that? Like, what about those texts would be useful?
They came, he was visited by a Christian delegation from the city of Najran, which used to be a Christian headquarters, for lack of a better term, in modern-day Saudi Arabia. Mm-hmm. And Muhammad referred to these stories and said, "Look, they're in my revelations. These were given to me by Gabriel, that Jesus only made these birds come to life because Allah allowed him. And he spoke in the cradle when he was a child because Allah allowed him. And this is proof that he was not God." And these Christians said, "Well, they're not in our New Testament. They're not in our scriptures." And they kind of go back and forth in the debate. And then Muhammad received some timely revelations, some repeated verses about these stories to kind of reiterate to them that I'm correct and your story is wrong. So that's just the way that the context comes through.
Gotcha. Yeah, very interesting. What other parallels are there? It doesn't have to be Christian sources, but other sources as well. Excuse me.
Well, there's the idea of the crucifixion has always been interesting because chronologically, as I mentioned, that comes number 92 out of 114 chapters. So that comes very late. So it always has to look at the context of who Muhammad was meeting. When did he meet them? Where did he meet them? And it's so difficult to pinpoint some of these dates because the Quran itself is a very tricky piece of literature to figure out the exact composition and when it was put together and that sort of thing. But as far as other correlations with the New Testament, there's not really, besides the Annunciation verses, there's nothing else that really, for lack of a better term, that really jives with what is in the New Testament. Yeah. Muslims say that you can't use the New Testament as a source because it's all wrong and it's corrupt. Now, there's a few cases you can use for apologetics if we get in discussions, is that they say the Holy Spirit guided Jesus and he was bestowed with the Holy Spirit when he was born and came to earth. And we say, okay, we believe in the Holy Spirit too. let's try to use that as a basic grounds for communication. But they also say the angel Gabriel was the Holy Spirit. And then other literature says Muhammad was the Holy Spirit. So that's another point of contention that's very difficult to get in discussion too.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, very good. Yeah, you were mentioning the chronological order. I'm glad you brought that up because the Quran's not laid out in chronological order, right? It's been reordered.
Right, correct. Yep.
I think by length, is that correct?
Yep, it's the order of the surahs or the chapters. That's how they tradition has it put together.
Right. Yeah, so it's important to try to pinpoint like where or when something was occurred so that you can kind of, you know, fix it with the what Muhammad or who Muhammad was talking to and stuff like that.
Right, correct.
Yeah. Were there any influence by the desert monks with Muhammad's understanding of Jesus and even Mary? I mean,
well, the Islamic sources tell us that Muhammad used to go pray in a cave 1 month out of the year and pretty much be a type of hermit, not take any food or water. People would bring him donations, that sort of thing. And he would seek the divine as a hanif. And a hanif is a term in Arabic, which means somebody who's a friend of God. It's applied to Abraham and I think David and a few other Old Testament individuals. But he was trying to seek God and seek the divinity in this cave outside of Mecca. And that's when he received his first revelation. And when you look at the archaeological histories, there were a series of monastic cells that were along something called the King's Highway, where Muhammad would be a merchant in the 7th century, traveling from modern-day Saudi Arabia up to modern-day Jordan into parts of Syria. And he encountered several of these monks. Now, the Muslim histories say that he did indeed meet these monks, but they twist it around and say, well, these monks recognized Muhammad as an authentic prophet, the final prophet. They left their Christian faith and followed him and started supporting him and his revelations and his mission as a prophet.
Ah.
Well, the Christian sources say, well, that's not true. This merchant came along and he learned everything he could from local monks and Jews at these bazaar fairs and trade gatherings. And he went back to his home country, and he just invented his own religion. So each side has their own particular perspective on it.
Okay. Yeah, interesting. But they both concede that he did have contact with Christian monks. Yeah, very good. Wow. Well, yeah, we're coming up to our next break. Man, this hour is flying. We're talking with Dr. Brian Bradford about Muhammad's Jesus, Quran parallels with non-biblical text. And fascinating discussion. If you'd like to join us, give us a call, 888-526-2151. And we'd love to hear from you. If you're listening to Hands On Apologetics with Gary Machuda, stay tuned, everyone.
This is Terry Barber inviting you, all the men, to a men's conference June 15th at the Sacred Heart Chapel. This is going to be a day where we're going to talk about true masculinity. You know, there's a problem in the Catholic Church today. We have very few men who love the Catholic faith. And I know a lot of the wives that I'm listening to right now are saying, I want my husband to be on fire for the faith. Send him to the men's conference. Your son, send him to the men's conference by going to virginmostpowerfulradio.org or call 877-526-2151. That's June 15th. When your husband comes back from this conference or your son, they're going to have a different view about their Catholic faith because they're going to meet three men who love Jesus and his bride, the church, and are going to instill in them a love for Christ and his church, the Eucharist, Our Lady. Bring them to virginmostpowerfulradio.org. Sign up there or call 877-526-2151. Full sheen ahead.
It is only because of your continued prayers and generous donations that Virgin Most Powerful Radio can broadcast live each weekday. We count on your spiritual and financial support because you understand the urgent need for Catholic programming that shares the gospel with clarity and charity, but without compromise. Please prayerfully consider becoming a monthly donor. You can set it up with the touch of a button on our website, CatholicRC.org.
Buying or selling your home or your business property? This is Terry Barber. Real Estate for Life underwrites the Terry and Jesse Show, and they can connect you to one of 900 pro-life real estate agents around the world. And when they receive their referral fee, they will give 80% of it to a pro-life organization. Wow! That's 80%! RealEstateForLife.org, 877-LIFE-US1.
Now, back to Hands-On Apologetics with Gary Machuda. If you'd like to join the conversation, call 888-526-2151. Here's Gary.
And welcome back, everybody. We're talking with Dr. Brian Bradford about Muhammad's Jesus and looking at Jesus in the Quran. And Dr. Bradford, most of the things that I know about Islam, I know through part of the Chaldean community here in Detroit area. And there was a monk that they mentioned to me often, and I never was really sure exactly how it plays into this story. But I believe that the monk was named Bahira.
Bahira, yes.
Bahira, yes.
Mm-hmm.
Who is he? What influence, if any, did he have on Muhammad?
Well, he's mentioned by both Christian and Muslim sources. The Muslim sources say that he recognized Muhammad as a final prophet. He left the Christian faith and worked with him to help interpret revelations. He did not give him any revelations, but he helped him interpret what was going on. But the Christian sources say, well, this guy used to be an Arian. He was kicked out of the Arian movement, so he's kind of like a double heretic. And any time Muhammad would say he's going to have a revelation, Bahira would go and write this revelation for him and hide it in the hollowed-out horn of a cow, where Muhammad would go find it, and then say, oh, look what I found. This is given to me by the angel Gabriel, and then just read what Bahira would give him. So the actual historicity behind the guy, we can't really be sure, but there is a kernel of truth, I think, if it's written from both sides of the story, that Muhammad did have contact with this individual.
Yeah. And so...
And the whole idea...
Go ahead.
And before I forget, the whole idea about monks, we want to mention before the break, you brought that up, that monks, Christian monks, are actually mentioned three times in the Quran, Surah 5, Surah 9, and Surah 57. Now, there's two negative comments and there's one positive comment. The first positive one says, you will certainly find the nearest in friendship to Muslims, those who say we are Christians, because they are priests and they are monks, and they do not behave with pride. Then the negative account says, as for monasticism, it was invented. It was not prescribed to them. It was meant to seek Allah's pleasure, but they did not deserve it in true fashion. And then it's again negative in chapter 9, and it says, Christians have taken their doctors of law and their monks for lords besides Allah. So that reflects to me, there had to be some ongoing relationship with Muhammad and surrounding monks for this attitude to change. And the history behind these passages, they come quite late. They come number 94 and number 112 and number 113 out of 114 total in the Quran. So they're very late when you put that together in the whole history behind Muhammad's revelations and everything. And I've always found that very interesting.
Yes. Yeah, indeed. Well, let me ask you, I guess a naive question, but if someone doesn't understand, you know, Islam, like I pretty much don't, someone could say, well, why would Muhammad have to go to these apocryphal sources or, you know, make up his own story when you have the gospel writings, which are extremely early? Why not just portray Jesus, you know, as he's portrayed in the New Testament? Why wouldn't they consider the New Testament authentic writings?
Well, that's a very difficult question to answer, because you would think that of all the missionary movements that were starting in Christianity. I mean, we have sources that say Bartholomew, after the crucifixion and ascension of Jesus, went down to modern-day Yemen and started preaching to the Jews down there, and they converted to Christianity. But I think the Arabic New Testament wasn't in existence until about the year, the late 600s or early 700s. So there was not a big literary, Christian movement that was involved in the Arabian Peninsula.
Okay.
And it was such a geographical backwater, I guess you could say, that with the exception of a few Byzantine Arab tribes who converted out of necessity for military and monetary exemptions and that sort of thing, there wasn't a whole lot of Christian interaction there. That's why I think Muhammad being a merchant, there's so many different pieces of heretical Christianity he picked up, because he went through areas where a lot of these heretics were expelled or kicked out of the church, and just ended up in these desert areas. And then other people say to me, other Catholics will say to me at lectures or book fairs or whatever, that it might be a touchy and uncomfortable thing for people to say, but they say, well, how much involvement did Satan have in inventing these stories to trick people, to turn them away from the true faith? And I suppose that's a matter of faith that each individual person has to think about themselves.
Mm-hmm. Right, right, But how do we want to say? So, in a sense, you know, by the time, authentic writings percolate down into Saudi Arabia, this whole endeavor has already started. And it seems to me that the reaction is that that these Christian stories are really a corruption, that that perhaps the monks or somebody kind of fabricated or changed, and that the Quran's kind of a restoration story of how it really was supposed to be. Is that correct?
That's a good way to put it, because a lot of these, if you look at the monks of the series, I believe it's called The History of the Monks of Syria and The History of the Monks of Palestine, that's written by some Byzantine historians in the 400s, they detail that there were various pockets of monks who were heretical monks who would have these fantastical visions and write down these stories and then sell them to people or trade them to people who were passing by. And they were warned to not take anything if it was presented to you by an entity calling himself the angel Gabriel, to not believe it. It was false. So there's lots of stories that Muhammad traveled through in an area where a lot of these, I guess you could say, quasi-monks were inventing these stories and passing these off as true. And pre-Islamic Arabia was not a very written or literate society anyway. It wasn't coming from a written historical tradition. For example, the Greek society of the Mediterranean area, there wasn't a whole lot of material that was written in general about anything. A lot of it were stories and oral traditions, and I think that's how Muhammad heard a lot of this. And then you have to look at the compilers of the Quran, who put it together, when they put it together, and that's a whole other topic as far as gathering sources, you know, looking and cutting and pasting, for lack of a better term, some of these ancient sources to come up with a strictly Arabic holy book.
Yeah, that would be an interesting subject for a show, basically how the Quran was put together.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I'm trying to both you and I are big fans of a work by Epiphanius of Salamis, the Panarion, which is this incredibly complex catalog of heresies and stuff. Is there anything Epiphanius shows in his Panarion that can kind of shine light on the Jesus in the Quran?
Well, he's a great source because he loved his heretics, that's for sure. And he's very important because he gives details of who lived where, when they were there, and the various texts that they used. And if you go through the index of some of those, you can look for Arabia or prophecy, monks, and that sort of thing. He details so many of these groups that you can kind of put together a heretical puzzle, I guess you could say, of a lot of these individuals. For example, there's the gospel of a man named Basilides, who wrote about Jesus not dying on the cross. Somebody else looked like him. It was Simon who helped him carry the cross. Everybody else got confused. And that's the idea, pretty much. It ends up in the Islamic interpretation of the crucifixion. And that dates very, very early when we talk about him.
Interesting.
And there's a host of other groups. He talks about monks who lived in caves. He talks about other stories and texts that people would dress up and pretend to be Christian monks and sell these stories to people that they had, these little visions in their own caves and that sort of thing. So it's kind of a template, I guess you could say, or a blueprint for what could be argued to be the origins of Islam, I suppose.
Yeah. Yeah, fascinating. That's very fascinating. Well, you know, you're incredibly well-read on this subject. Can you recommend maybe a book or two where someone who has zero knowledge of Islam, how they could become, you know, familiarize them with their beliefs and also how to maybe even evangelize, you know, where they differ from us?
Well, there's so much literature out there. I mean, if you just go to Amazon and put in Islam, you're going to be looking for days because there's just so many titles that come out all the time.
Yeah.
I hate to be self-aggrandizing, but the works I have written, Muhammad's Jesus, Historical Jerusalem from an Islamic perspective, that's another one.
Interesting.
Arabian religion before Muhammad is well put together because it helps explain from an Islamic perspective what they think religion was in the Arabian Peninsula before Islam and even before Christianity came along.
Yeah.
There's a lot of some really hard to find works by some Jesuit priests who lived in the Middle East. They're very hard to find. I can't recall their names at this point, but they're difficult to find. But if you search enough, I think you can actually download some of those on PDF formats from the internet. There's Jesus in the Quran by Jeffrey Perrender. I do remember that one. That's a good source. There's another title, More Than a Prophet, written. I think that's written by a convert from Islam to Christianity that explained why he left the faith after looking at all these elements about Islam and comparing it to Jesus and Jesus's life from the gospel perspective. And if people really want to get into understanding Islam, the Quran is available online to download if you want to read the first five chapters, which really are, to be quite honest, they're very strange, and they're not very historically like a flowing narrative, but they might give some idea about where they're coming from. And as far as evangelization, I always have to start with talking about the person of Jesus.
Yes.
Because there's so many stories and there's such a rich salvation history that the Muslims don't have because it's not included in their book.
Yeah. Very good.
And
well,
it takes just one passage to get the ball rolling, I think.
Absolutely. Well, thank you so much for coming on the program. We appreciate it.
Thank you again, Gary. Appreciate it.
All right. And that is Dr. Brian Bradford, his books, Muhammad's Jesus, and also all his other books are available on Amazon.com. Check them out. They're very well written. And coming up next week, big week next week, we're going to have Mike Aquilina, Carl Keating, Ken Hensley, and Joseph Pierce come on the show. Talk about apologetics, explaining, defending the faith. Coming up next, The Terry and Jesse Show. High intensity talk radio coming at you. Time for me to turn off the JoJo lights here at the Midwest Command Center. Thank you so much for listening, folks. I appreciate it. And I wish everybody a happy and blessed weekend. Take care. Bye-bye.
In the 1990s, I lived and worked in Hollywood. But when my wife Betty's mom took ill, we relocated to Orange County. And it was during this time in our lives that I converted to Catholicism. Once my eyes were opened to the truth, I couldn't learn enough about the faith. But I had less free time than ever, especially with a long commute. That's when I discovered the real value of Catholic audio. Listening to cassette tapes transformed my daily commute into a miniature retreat. And that's the beauty of Virgin Most Powerful Radio today. Since the podcasts are archived, you can listen anytime on our smartphone app. I know how listening to Catholic audio can bring you closer to Christ and His Church. So I encourage you to visit the App Store or go to vmpr.org and download the app today. It just might change your life. I'm Matthew Arnold for Virgin Most Powerful Radio.
Virgin Most Powerful Radio, sharing the gospel with clarity and charity.